Shopify is a global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. And sell more with less effort thanks to the Shopify magic, your AI-powered all-star. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/redcircle, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/redcircle now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/redcircle.
All I'm learning in this episode is that I might be a musical genius.
And that you might like Incubus.
And I might like Incubus. Oh, no. Way to go.
Two terrible discoveries. Hi, I'm Mark.
Hey, I'm Nicole, and this is Nevermind the Music.
Do you know Incubus?
I really don't know Incubus, and people tell me that Incubus is so good and I should listen to them, but I missed the moment, and to go back and revisit them seems futile at this point.
You're a Chili Peppers fan, aren't you?
I like the Chili Peppers quite a bit, yeah.
Because they're adjacent to that, especially early Incubus feels like they listened to a lot of Chili Peppers.
I didn't start listening to the Chili Peppers until much more recently. I didn't listen to them like as they were coming out with albums. Like I kind of went back.
Well, I think they're still coming out with albums, but
yes.
You're the rare person who likes a famous band's later stuff after everybody else has moved on.
I think,
or you just discovered it later.
I'm just very stubborn. So people are like, oh, you should listen to the Chili Peppers. I'm like, don't tell me what to do. But then I like saw them live and I was like, oh, they're actually very, very, very good.
So we'll probably come back to the Red Hot Chili Peppers in another episode. But Incubus are kind of growing out of that same funk metal kind of Los Angeles scene. But I'd like to talk about the song Stellar from their 2000 album Make Yourself, the second single.
Can I tell you, I had never heard the song until you pitched
when I said you should listen to it. Okay, what have you heard by them?
Not a lot.
Did you hear Drive?
If you played it for me, I'm sure I heard it, but I'm very naive to Incubus. It's a blank spot in my music knowledge. This whole genre, I was listening to like Crosby, Stills, and Nash at this moment in my life. It's backwards.
So Drive is definitely their biggest hit. So same album, Drive actually was more of a real hit, right? So Drive hit number 9 on the Hot 100. You probably haven't heard Stellar because it was not a Hot 100 hit.
How many albums does Incubus have?
Oh, Incubus has a bunch.
Because Drive is literally the only song I know.
So Incubus has 8 albums. The most recent is 8 from 2017. But if you look at their albums like Grenades and If Not Now When, those are more like kind of adult contemporary hits, like that song Promises, Promises. But early on, they're almost labeled new metal.
Yeah.
Now, I don't really hear it as new metal myself. New metal, of course, I'm talking about bands like Korn or Limp Bizkit, stuff like that, some Linkin Park. Okay, parenthetically, where are you at with new metal?
I'm laughing at just hearing you say Limp Bizkit, because the way you say
Limp Bizkit?
Limp Bizkit.
It's just Bizkit? It is just Bizkit? You know, I always wondered. I have to tell you, I did not give Limp Bizkit a time of day at all.
Are they the Nookie people? We did it all for the Nookie?
The Nookie people. That's right. That's their tribe.
I don't know.
Tribe.
That's not like where... I don't like that type of music. I mean, I appreciate it. I like music generally, but it's just not what I'm going to go to.
I was a hard no on new metal when it came out.
I like Metallica, but that's old metal.
That's not new metal. It's not new metal, N-E-W. It's N-U metal.
Oh, I like it even less.
So new metal is this, listeners, if you've forgotten, if you've repressed the memories of Freak on a Leash or Fred Durst screaming, I Gotta Have Faith. New metal is a fusion genre of industrial metal, so like the electronic stuff from like a Nine Inch Nails sort of style, with the sort of funk rock, funk metal of a band like maybe you could say some Jane's Addiction or Chili Peppers. They're sort of funk rock, less funk metal. Fused with rap metal, think Rage Against the Machine, bands like that, and then just a general alternative rock, right? So it's this fusion genre, which should add up to be something awesome, because fusion genres often do, but... Yeah. I wasn't really down back then.
All the parts are great. Like, Rage Against the Machine, great.
Nine Inch Nails. Nine Inch Nails, great.
Yeah. Right? Like, I'm into that.
It's just something about it that it just struck me the wrong way back then.
I can't put the pieces together. Where would you put Marilyn Manson in this?
So Marilyn Manson, more industrial metal, I would think. So electronic beats with heavy guitars. Think of that, right? It became kind of a craze in the late 90s, early 2000s. And certainly there are some Incubus tunes that sort of fit that. New Skin was a sort of not well-known single from their previous album, Science. And Pardon Me from this album, sort of, and they have a DJ. So DJ Kilmore, that is a mark of nu metal. You know, Linkin Park has a DJ. Sugar Ray had a DJ, and they were kind of nu metal, even, believe it or not.
Gosh.
I don't know. I a lot of this stuff I sort of hated. Also, though, bands were getting unfairly, I would think, lumped in. Like System of a Down is way more sort of prog progressive metal, almost like Tool, and that I wouldn't really think of them as nu metal at all, but
and
they
like,
were lumped
Tool's
in there.
Great.
Sure. So
right?
was System of a Down.
Sounds great. And in my head, I do kind of clump them together just because of the time.
It's the time. Yeah. It's the time. And maybe certain things about the vocal style. And look, there's influences, cross-pollination between these styles. But anyways, this song, we're talking about Stellar, which I don't think of as nu metal at all, though it's got a heavy rock chorus. Mm. This hit number 2 on the modern rock charts, so not quite a top 40 hit. Number 17 on U.S. mainstream rock. Remember our conversation where I described that I do not understand the difference between the charts?
But it's okay. We don't have to understand it. We just have to subscribe to it.
So I knew this is, I've chosen a few songs that stand out to me as significant and worth talking about that haven't been top 10 hits. Mm. This will be one of them. I think it's a worthy journey.
Let's go.
One thing I did want to say before we jump into this song, one thing that's cool about Incubus, cultural appropriation, definitely pointed out, is that they use some unusual instruments. Brandon Boyd, the lead vocalist, plays the djembe on certain songs. You know, the djembe, the West African drum.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, my friend djembe classes in high school.
Oh, I thought you were going to say at a liberal arts college, and I would say, yep, sounds like a guy
no,
or a girl in a liberal arts college.
A prep school in rural New Hampshire. So.
Even better, right? Very connected to the West African culture,
yeah,
I'm sure.
Very connected.
So
didn't feel
he also plays the didgeridoo.
Yeah, nice. Aboriginal Australian instrument.
That's right. The wind instrument. This is their song, Redefine, him playing.
So 90s, those two things.
That definitely goes into a nu metal jam there.
Yeah, like I don't hate it because you can pick apart all the different influences and that's interesting to me.
It's cool. It's good. Mm. Does border on nu metal. But in any case, I like that there's these other instruments in there. Though, of course, like I said, there is a cultural appropriation element there, but it's a musical instrument. I think people should be able to use them if they have something interesting to do with the sound. But before we talk about the song, one last little thing. Mike Einziger, the guitar player of Incubus. Check out his YouTube channel. I just have to say, I want to shout this out because I want people to do more of this, including Mike Einziger. He hasn't updated this in like a decade. On YouTube, he's like literally teaching you how to play the Incubus songs. Like
That's
he
cool.
shows you, he doesn't give notation or anything, but he shows you exactly how he plays it. And if everybody did that, my, you know, youth learning the guitar would have been so much. Now, obviously, there wasn't YouTube when I was learning guitar, but I mean, he co-wrote Wake Me Up with Avicii.
Oh,
right?
That's a great song.
And there's a video of him. I think it's either on his channel or it's on the Incubus official channel, like teaching you how to play.
The bridge is played up here on the 12th fret.
Oh my gosh.
I don't know if you can see that. So
he's so cute.
Like this. I'll try that better. Sorry, I lost my balance.
He's awesome. How humble and kind.
I know. And he did them, and it's like a whole series he did, but he probably only got through like 5 episodes and then lost interest in it or something. And I'm like, oh my God, what if he did like every song? How cool a resource
would
that be?
I never knew he co-wrote that with Avicii. Like, yeah. R.I.P.
Great. R.I.P. indeed. Yeah. Okay.
That's
so
great.
Why did I choose Stellar? I wanted to talk about the beat of this song. We've talked about meter a few times in this podcast. Meter is the way you count the music. So sometimes people talk about 4-4. That means four beats. Each of those beats is a quarter note. We don't need to know that, but 4-4 sounds like 1-2-3-4. And then that repeats 1-2-3-4. If I have a meter that's 3-4, you would go 1-2-3-1-2-3. There's some more complicated meters out there too, but listen to this song. Tell me what meter you hear this being in. At least what number. You don't need to know if it's fours on the bottom or anything. How do you do it? Make me feel like I do. How do you do it? It's better than I ever knew.
I feel like it's like a two.
Two beat is possible.
But so like it might just be in four because it's
so
they're reciprocal.
Count along. Yeah. See, okay. See what makes sense.
1, 2, 3, 4, 1, 2, 3, 4, 1, 2, 3, 4, 1, 2, 3, 4, 1, 2, 3, 4, 1, 2, 3, 4. Right?
Yeah, you're right.
Yes.
So what's the difference? Why two and why not 1, 2, 1, 2? It has to do with how often you have what's called a downbeat.
Sure.
So the first beat of a bar tends to be strong, right? And so in this song, you have a strong beat happening not every two, but happening every four, right?
Okay.
How do you do it? 1, 2, 3. Make me 1, 2 like I do 1, 2.
Yeah.
It's not 1 and 1, 2.
Sure.
1. If you have more frequent emphasis, you would count 2. So like marches are in 2 because you go left, right, step, 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 step. But this song, rock music, tends to be in 4.
4 on the floor.
For reasons we'll get to soon. Not 4 on the floor.
Ugh.
4 on the floor is when you've got 4 beats. And the kick drum, the bass drum, is always playing every beat.
Okay.
A stereotypical rock beat, and we'll get to this, tends to usually have only certain ones be emphasized, right? 4 on the floor, you're emphasizing all 4 beats, right? So this song, we can say, yeah, pretty straightforward rock 4 beat. 4-4 quadruple meter is what we would say. 4 beats per measure. But some parts of this song, less clear. Take a listen to the first part of the first verse. What's the beat?
Meet me in outer space.
Can you try counting it?
3, 4, 1, 2, 3, 4, 1, 2, 3, 4, 1, 2, 3, 4.
So I think you got it.
Okay.
That's pretty good. I think you got it. Did it feel a little disorienting?
Yeah, like it was hard to land on it.
It was hard to land. And I think the reason for that is because the different layers don't agree. Listen to the guitar.
What? That's a really beautiful guitar. I think I like Incubus.
Mike Einzinger's guitar playing has a lot of those bendy.
It's beautiful.
And he does it in Wake Me Up. It's really beautiful guitar parts. It really is. So
way to go.
We could count this like this. 1, 2, 3, 4, 1, 2, 3, 4, 1, 2, 3, 4, 1, 2, 3, 4, 1, 2, 3, 4. That's the way that sort of fits the guitar to me. That sounds right. Mm. Or we could count it like this. 1, 2, 3, 4, 1, 2, 3, 4, 1, 2, 3, 4, 1, 2, 3, 4.
You kind of don't know where to start
because
or like when to start.
Does it start when it starts or does it start after it starts?
Right.
It's kind of
confusing.
There's two ways to count. Let's try it against the actual verse we heard.
Okay.
1, 2, 3, 4, 1, 2, 3, 4, 1, 2, 3, 4, 1, 2, 3, 4, 1, 2, 3, 4. Or this way. 1, 2, 3, 4, 1, 2, 3, 4, 1, 2, 3, 4, 1, 2, 3, 4.
The second way seems more organic to me when you count him And not
if
the guitar.
If you consider the vocals,
yeah,
it fits more the second version. If you consider the guitar, maybe it fits the first version. Basically, I just started my one a beat later, right? So let's move forward to the second half of the verse where we have more information.
Okay.
So we've got the bass and the drums, and the bass and the drums are probably going to tell us more about the beat.
I've grown tired of that place.
It's much easier with the drums.
Can you count it?
Yeah. I've grown tired 1, 2, 3, 4. 1, 2, 3, 4.
Let's see. Why is that? I'm going to now play it. That section, no guitar.
I've grown
3, 4, 1, 2, 3, 4, 1, 2, 3, 4, 1, 2, 3, 4.
And it's super easy.
Yeah, it doesn't feel like I'm not like...
The guitar is the odd man out. What is it about that beat being so clear? What does the bass and the drums entering clarify for us?
Well, it just grounds this really melodic guitar. It roots it in something. It like gives it a home, almost.
Wow. Let's listen just
from rhythm.
Let's listen just to the drums.
Okay. And 1, 2, 3, 4. And 1, 2, 3.
Great. Yeah, you got the and. That's what makes it a little complex.
A little
is that kick drum going and one? What's that snap on the snare? The stick on the snare. And 1, 2, 3, 4. And 1, 2, 3.
That
four.
Downbeat again.
So the downbeat is the kick is going and one.
Mm-hmm.
When is that snare click happening?
2 and 4. One.
We have a high emphasis happening on 2 and 4.
Yeah.
And beat one is being emphasized by the low instrument.
Guys, I think I'm great at counting music.
I think you're really good at finding the beat. And that's not always true. Some people struggle with this. But what we're hearing here, the thing that makes it easy to hear, even though the guitar is super disorienting, is this thing we call a backbeat. Do you know the term backbeat?
Yes.
Do you know what a backbeat is?
I don't know what it is, but I know the term. I've heard it before. I can infer that it's counter to the downbeat.
Okay.
Somehow.
So the backbeat is a rhythm that has an emphasis happening on beats 2 and 4.
Okay. Well, so I was wrong.
You usually have the kick drum or some sort of a low thing playing on 1 and maybe 1 and 3. Usually 1 and 3. 1, 3. But then you have a higher instrument, usually the snare drum, sometimes a tambourine or something, or an open hi-hat cymbal, playing on the 2 and 4. 1, 2, 3, 4. 1, 2, 3, 4. This is baked into so much popular music over the last, call it 75 years. So this backbeat is so cooked in to most pop songs, honestly, that we hear it. And regardless of what's going on with that confusing guitar part, we are locked in to a meter. Let's hear some examples. So this is Good Rockin' Tonight. This is maybe not the first song to have a really prominent backbeat, but it's one of them. This is 1947, late 40s R&B slash early, early rock and roll song. This is Wynonie Harris's version of the track. Listen to the claps that give us a really clear backbeat. 1, 2, 3, 4. 1, 2, 3, 4.
I feel like that is early rock and roll. Like that blues riff in the background.
That boogie-woogie riff is one way to say it. Listeners, we decided the term boogie was very out of fashion in another episode. But yeah, it has a rock and roll. And part of the transition from R&B of the 40s into the 50s rock and roll does seem to be the emphasis of that backbeat happening. The backbeat becomes a big, really important part of the rhythm instead of the sort of swing or shuffle beat that maybe would have dominated. So, of course, this grows and kind of takes over. And what do we have? Our prototypical, if anybody wants to know what a backbeat is, this is what you do. 1977, Queen, We Will Rock You. 1 and 2, 3 and 4. 1 and 2, 3 and 4.
It's also, if you're going to learn how to play the drums, that's the first song that you learn.
That's the first thing you learn to do. And the thing is, you do it. If you play pop or rock or country or hip hop, you can then play 85% of at least a simplified version of that. So the backbeat is something that is endemic to 4-4, to being in 4. Now, if you're in three or something, or other meters, 7, 4, well, then you're going to have to do things a little different. But if we're in four, your brain almost expects the backbeat or something like the backbeat. So then listen to what we get. Here's verse 2, and the backbeat is in full glory, and we're no longer confused about the beat.
Meet me in outer space.
1, 2, 3, 4. 1, 2, 3, 4. It's just thumping along, right? It's super clear there. So
it's cool how you said, like, your brain expects the backbeat. Like, and I think that that's really true. Like, when I first listened to this song, it was disorienting because it wasn't, I couldn't lock into anything. My brain was, like, searching for a pattern, and it was harder to decipher the pattern. Like, we want things to be easy, and that wasn't
sure.
easy.
Yeah.
I think that that's really cool. And now that it's, like, locked in, it feels like the song has more clarity to me. But that's just probably because it's in a motif that I'm more comfortable with and more accustomed to. So I think that that's a cool kind of connection.
Totally. So let's apply this to the hook. See if there's a backbeat there. Because when I first played it, you found the beat pretty easy.
Because I'm very, very smart.
Possibly it's because you're very, very smart.
Possibly.
How do you do well? Make me feel like I do.
Do you hear a backbeat?
Yeah, it's on the 2 and the 4 again.
Yeah, there's that backbeat.
Yeah.
Let's listen just the drums. 1, 2, 3, 4. 1, 2, 3, 4.
1.
Okay.
Yeah. Cool.
So it's all simple, right?
Kind of.
Okay.
Simple for us.
The beginning's a little disorienting.
Yes.
But this actually gets weirder. Let's listen to the pre-chorus of the section. So before the how do you do it hook we just heard, what's going on here?
It's just like, just when I figured out it changes again.
It got a little weird.
And it got weird.
Shall we count through it?
Okay.
Let's try to count, assuming we're keeping our beat totally steady from the verse. Okay?
Okay.
1, 2, 3, 4. 1, 2, 3, 4. 1, 2, 3, 4. 1, 2, 3, 4. 1, 2, 3, 4. 1, 2, 3, 4. 1, 2, 3.
It works, but it doesn't.
But like,
it doesn't
really
sound right at all,
on.
Right?
You have to hang on.
You gotta hang
to
on.
That. Yeah.
So what's happening is that really loud outburst and all of the chord changes and all of the vocal changes are happening on beat 4. Listen again, and I'm just gonna count out the 4, which is just so weird. 3, 4.
Uh-huh.
4. 4. 4. 4. 4, 1, 2, 3.
Yeah.
Yes, you can hang on,
mm-hmm.
but it's extremely disorienting.
It is, and it's building like anticipation in a way that we're not comfortable with, where we need that 2 to ground us before the 4 hits, and we're not getting it, so it feels really
right.
unstable.
Now let me play just the drums alone to the pre-chorus.
Okay.
Let's see if we hear anything that feels like a backbeat in there, because it's so disorienting, that might suggest we aren't hearing the backbeat.
Okay. Yeah.
It's sort
there.
Of there. It's there, but it's a little it's a little off.
And it gets hidden by the vocals too. Like when
sure.
you're
and
listening
the guitars
to
are just screaming. There.
Yes.
Yeah. I have another way that we can kind of hear this too.
Okay.
Does it feel to you almost like this section is slower?
It feels like it's dragging. I know it's not, but it feels like it is.
Well, there's a version where we could count this.
Okay.
As halftime. Let me check
sure.
this out. What
okay.
I'm going to do, halftime, listeners, is when the tempo will just be cut in half. So we
sure.
will go from 1, 2, 3, 4 to 1 mm. and 2 and 3,
mm-hmm.
as opposed to double time, which would be 1, 2, 3, 4, 1, 2, 3, 4, 1, 2. What I'm going to do, you know how it starts on beat 4, the big outburst?
Yes.
I'm going to give us a short bar. I'm going to change the meter so it goes to 3, 4 for one bar. And then I'm going to count halftime.
Are you allowed to do stuff? Like you just changed the time
signature
halfway through a song?
We're just trying to make sense of the music,
okay.
Nicole. Take a listen.
Ugh.
1, 2, 3, 4. 1, 2, 3. 1, 2, 3, 4. And 1, 2, 3, 4. And 1, 2, 3, 4. 1, 2, 3. That sort of feels right, doesn't it?
It feels right, but it makes me uncomfortable.
It's really bizarre. Yeah. And notice that I did this little squirrely one and or three and four and
Yeah, you added a 16th note in there.
Because we have to add an extra half beat. So
the math doesn't work.
The math doesn't work otherwise. So if you do it my way, which honestly I think kind of sounds right, you've got a 3-4 bar, halftime 4-4, which feels really groovy. But then you got to end with a 5-4 bar to make up the time. It's very weird. I should say, if you download the official sheet music or you buy the official chord book or whatever, they just write it as 4-4 with this really weird sort of confusing moment. But it feels almost like we want to hear this meter change. And then later, if we hear the bridge section of this song, we have actually, honest to goodness, a 3-4 bar with then a sort of bar of 5 at the end. Listen, again, to make up the time. Make me feel like
I do.
So what happened there again? Let me count through that.
I can count that all in fours. Make me feel 1, 2, 3, 4. 1, 2, 3, 4. 1, 2, 3, 4. 1, 2, 3, 4. 1, 2, 3, 4. 1, 2, 3, 4. 1, 2, 3, 4, 1.
It kind of works, right?
Gets inverted though halfway through.
Yeah, if I change the meter? Like we did before, I'm going to give us 3-4 and then I'm going to slow down. Does this feel right? Make me feel 1, 2, 3, 4. 1, 2, 3, 1. And 2, and 3, and 4. And 1, and 2, and 3, and 4. And did you hear how the drums are doing a slow backbeat there? So this section would almost agree with what I suggested, but yet your count still works.
Mm.
And then they get out by having to add this stupid extra beat. 2, 3, 4, 1, 2, 3, 4.
I think that moment is really prototypical of this genre.
Interesting.
For me, it's like that little like extra breath of a moment before you land back on the downbeat.
That's interesting.
It's like how when I think of all this music, like Limp Bizkit and Korn, like it's that there's always something extra just jammed in there to make it work.
So again, I don't really associate this with the new metal thing, but I think I kind of see what you mean. I think we mentioned Soundgarden when we were doing our sidetrack, that sort of meter change happening. The fact is, this may not even be a time change. It may just be counting through like you were doing, but it's metrically ambiguous. It's rhythmically ambiguous. And this idea of the stars, right? Stellar. It's sort of this love song, but it's sort of unclear. It's not grounded. It's floating. I think fits. It's very uncertain. And I like music with metrical ambiguity. When we have such a straightforward thing like the backbeat, it's really fun when artists play around with it. So here's a few examples. Beach Boys. We've played the Beach Boys recently. This is Slip On Through from 1970s album Sunflower. A pretty nice Dennis Wilson song that most people probably don't know. How do you count this?
Lots of people with no place to go.
One and two and three and four and one and two and three and four and.
Okay, so you've got it going one and two and. So let's hear that little like goot, goot, that weird sort of percussion instrument. How does that fit in with what you're doing? Do that again.
Lots of people with no place to go.
It's on twos and fours, right?
You have it on 2 and 4?
Yeah.
Here, let's count. I'll see how it lines up.
Lots of people.
1, 2, and 3, and 4, and 1, and 2, and 3, and 4, and 1, and 2.
So for you, it's on every beat.
Yeah, I think.
Yeah, but there's a version where a figure like that could almost sound like an upbeat. Because listen to the snare. Is the snare playing a backbeat?
lots of people with no place to go.
The drums are playing one and two and one and
it's really hard for me because I'm not a musician to isolate the snare drum in that.
Right.
I can't figure out like, what the snare is.
Here is not playing on two and four. It's playing on the and of two and the and of four.
Mm.
Listen. One, two, and four, and one, two, and three, four, and one. And so if you follow that as a as if it's the backbeat, you get totally off with the rhythm. Because it simplifies once we get to the hook of the song, it totally gets simple.
What a great song.
Dennis Wilson, very underappreciated.
Do people say that Incubus was inspired by the Beach Boys? Do they say that about themselves?
Oh, I've never heard that.
Because there's connections.
Maybe. Yeah.
In tonality.
Certainly the Dennis Wilson sort of more rock side of it.
That's interesting.
I've never thought of that.
All I'm learning in this episode is that I might be a musical genius.
And that you might like Incubus.
And I might like Incubus. Oh, no. Way to go.
Two terrible discoveries. Okay. Okay. This is another example. This is 311.
Oh my gosh.
Okay. Oh.
I just was transported.
Maybe that's another sidetrack for another time. This is their song Loco from 1995, self-titled album. Starts very clearly in a 4-4 backbeat, but then the guitar and the drums really start to disagree.
I was just transported back to a basement in the late 90s, just causing trouble. Just transported to that moment.
That's what they're good for, I guess.
Yeah.
So we don't need to count through that one, but that middle section, it similarly gets super disorienting because the guitar and the drums disagree. One more example. This is On Ice by Chris Thiele. He's a mandolin player, mandolin virtuoso, podcast host, radio host.
All
I don't know. How to describe. This is On Ice from his solo album from 2004. The drums here, not particularly helpful. Where's the beat?
But that's wrong.
So you're hearing the fact that there's these fast eighth notes happening.
Yeah.
And they're grouped in groups of three. Bum, 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 ba-da-ba-dum, bum. But the actual beat under that, those are pushing against it. So what I hear is this. Two and three and four and one and two and three and four and one and two and three and four and one and two and three and four and one, two, three, four. And then it all falls into place when he's singing, right? What you're hearing is these groupings of the division of the beat. One, two, three. One, two, three. One, two. 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 Just for a moment. And of course, 3 + 3 + 2 is just 8. So this is that Coldplay does this a lot. Three plus three plus two is a common way to make things a little angular in a pop song while still following this sort of standard 4-4 grouping.
I have nothing to add because I feel like I've really just learned so much today and that I'm awesome at stuff that I never knew I was good at before.
Maybe that's what we have to talk about. But can you speak to ambiguity at all? Is there something in psychology that this lack of why is it pleasurable? If I'm on the dance floor and the beat disappears, that's a problem probably.
Yeah.
But if I'm listening to music, there's something about losing my place temporarily only to find it again later that's really satisfying.
Well,
Can you inform that?
Yeah, I think it makes us feel smart, right? And I'm feeling pretty smart today, but it makes us feel like we were lost, but we found our way. Good for us. We figured it out. We arrived to where we were supposed to arrive. So that's one angle that you could address ambiguity to me. I think that we feel uncomfortable when things are ambiguous because we are trained we're solution focused people, and we like a lot of us deal with our emotions in a solution focused way. Like, what is causing me to feel this way? Let me find a resolution to that. So in terms of this musical construct, like, you feel this ambiguity, you're kind of lost, and you're looking for a solution. And that solution is very comforting and very like grounding, because we don't like to feel untethered. We want to be grounded, right?
Right.
And we're just generally not. So we search for things like that to like kind of root us back down. Most of us, not all of us. Some people love to be untethered. You and I are not those people.
But the momentary untetheredness of it, I find really satisfying. But it might be because of the smart, like, is there a kind of pretentiousness to this? I don't know. But because when you first heard this song, I know you didn't know it. It's not like song you've heard a bunch, but you didn't know that I was going to do this counting through.
Nope.
Did you notice the weird rhythmic stuff? Or did it just sort of fade in?
Honestly, when I first heard this song, I was watching the music video and I was really distracted by like the floatiness and the ambiguity of the video. Mm. And I couldn't make sense of the visuals I was seeing in a way. Like, I read the, how I prep is I'll read the lyrics first, which I did. And I could like make sense of the, okay, this is a love song.
Sure.
Yeah. Right. For sure. And then I watched the video and I the imagery informed that as well, but I just kind of got, I felt disoriented in watching the video and trying to marry the song with the lyrics with the visuals I was seeing. And now I can understand why I felt that disorientation.
Right.
Because I was looking for a schema that wasn't there, right? Or it's harder to find. It wasn't as accessible as like something very conventional. So I immediately said, I don't like this, because I couldn't figure it out.
Okay.
Right?
So this song, obviously not a super hit single, but number two on the modern rock tracks.
Mm-hmm.
I was struck by this song's weird rhythm immediately, you know, back when I heard this when I was a high school student.
Sure.
And I feel very unequipped to know how much this is perceivable. The weirdness is perceivable by other people. Clearly other people liked this song, but I don't think they liked it in the way that everybody back then was talking about how fancy Radiohead albums were. I know people weren't going, oh my God, I love math rock. I love Incubus's new song, Stellar. That wasn't happening. It's not, people weren't approaching it like they were approaching a Rush album where it was all complicated and they were going to show off how smart they were. So,
I didn't give them the credit. I think something about them at that moment, I wrote them off. I didn't think that it was as nuanced. I just thought it was a...
I think it's the link to the new metal thing, probably.
Maybe, yeah. Like, I kind of didn't give them the time of day because I felt like it wasn't for me.
Right.
But now that I'm older and newly discovered awesome at music...
Counting rhythm.
I was just counting rhythms, really good at it. I am going to go back and revisit a lot of Incubus songs because I feel like... or listen to them for the first time, because I think I can appreciate them more now than I could when they first came out. And, you know, this speaks to like this idea of growth and development, and speaks to the idea that you can admit that you are wrong, which teenagers cannot do. They don't have capacity for dichotomous thinking, to think that you can hold two existing viewpoints and two counter viewpoints in your hands at the same time and like live in that space.
That's so funny you mentioned that. We're talking about music and being wrong about it. You know how people talk about, oh, you're going to a new school, you've moved to a new state. Oh, no. But guess what? You get to reinvent yourself. You can go by Marco instead of Mark, or whatever you want. Right. Nikki instead of Nicole.
No,
do you ever go by Nikki?
I'm decidedly not a Nikki.
OK, I'm not a Marco either.
No, you'd be a Marky, maybe. If you grew up in Boston, they'd be calling you Marky.
I was definitely
for sure.
Marky when I was a kid, but I wasn't Boston. I didn't go by that, but certain people in my family called me that. Anyways. When I was in high school, I really hated, like, at least told the world that I really hated, like, 80s pop and synth pop. Something that I have proven time and time again to desperately love.
Like, desperately
But, you know, it's the grunge era and the kind of rise of punk, at least in the mainstream in that era. And I felt like, ew, synthesizers, ew, dance music. And I was really anti that music. And it was just so clean. Like, when I went to college... like literally the next time I heard Madonna or something, I was like, oh, this is awesome. And then I was just
there
open. So I would like to apologize to my high school girlfriend for all the railing against 80s pop I did in the era. And then immediately sold out that viewpoint shortly into college, embracing it to the point that at the end of college, I was in an 80s pop cover band.
Like your whole
because
vibe.
I loved it so much.
No, I think it is really interesting how much we identify our sense of self with things that we do or things that we like when you, and that changes as you get older. And we're, that's, this is an example of that. But when we fill in the blank of, you know, the sentence, I am blank, we only allow ourselves to like things that fit. Like when Incubus came out, like I was a hippie art kid. Incubus didn't fit in that, you know, Crosby, Stills, Nash and Young, Bob Dylan, 311, Sublime kind of fit in that. And that's what I was listening to at this moment, right? Because we keep ourselves in such a bubble of what our paradigms are that at that moment for you, pop music did not fit in into the archetype you've developed for yourself and your self-concept.
Yeah. So I'm gonna even go further there. We're somewhat defined, of course, by what we like. Oh, I'm a Swiftie, or oh, I'm an Incubus fanboy or whatever. But we are very much defined by what we don't.
Yeah.
Not to bring my own. This isn't psychology or anything, but I'm going to tread on your turf a little bit.
That's okay.
Have you ever read any of Yuval Harari books? Harari's books?
No.
He wrote this book called Sapiens as well.
Okay, I've heard of that.
So he's an Israeli author, kind of more almost philosophy or historian
like
philosophy.
Malcolm Gladwell or even like Mary Roach kind of in a way.
Sort of. I don't know. What's Mary Roach's?
Oh, she like hyper focuses on like one topic for each book, like, and they're great. And her tone is really kind of funny and satirical. Like she wrote a great book called Stiff about what happens to our bodies postmortem. She wrote one called Chew or something about like food that goes through your, how food.
So like super esoteric deep dives. Yeah, that's
super
like Malcolm Gladwell.
Yeah.
So this book Sapiens is, I think the subtitle is A Brief History of Humankind. And he's talking about sort of the development of society. It's an extremely good book from about a decade ago. There's this one observation on this topic that really struck me. He was talking about how like any time that we've had sort of opposing worlds, right? Mm-hmm. Whether it's Sparta versus Athens or Soviet Union versus the United States.
So
or
like every human conflict.
Every human conflict or... Think of how many innumerable things those cultures have absolutely in common.
Yeah.
We both have the same laws of physics. We have the same mathematical systems. In some ways, we have closely related languages. We watch some of the same TV shows, have some of the same cultural and historical references. We dress in some ways a lot the same, but oh my God, they are different in this key way. You know, think back to all the wars with the Catholics versus the Protestants back in the late Middle Ages. If it's like, we believe in consubstantiation, you believe in transubstantiation, we must kill each other.
Right. And what you're talking about, again, Mark, you're doing something great in that you're understanding social psychological concepts without knowing the words for those concepts. And
so
you
what
do
is that?
That's called conflict theory in sociology.
So we're defined by our differences.
Or the idea that our differences are constructed to keep us fighting because we need to be fighting. So we don't, in a couple of different ways you could apply this theory, is if I'm fighting with you about our religion, we're not fighting against, say, like the 1% of people that control the world's wealth.
People we should be fighting.
Right. Yeah. We're too busy fighting about like left-wing, white, right-wing BS politics to remember that we're all more alike than we are different.
Right.
We all do have a common enemy, but we're too busy fighting with each other to address that common enemy.
Right.
Right. So, and that started after the Civil War when people realized that poor whites and newly emancipated slaves had a lot in common.
Right.
In terms of what their needs were.
And so they needed to be separated.
So they need to be separated and like pit against each other.
Or else it would be bad for the landowners.
Yes.
Yeah. Wild. So yeah, we're a bit of far afield from Incubus, I think. But
I don't think so.
The idea of like, I defined myself not necessarily as a guy who liked rock music, but as a guy who didn't like top 40 pop.
And this is that. Like if you don't like top 40 pop in this time and place, you're listening to Incubus.
Right. Sure. Right. Because it was a little fancy. No. To be clear, this music's really accessible. Like it's catchy. Drive is this pop song that we heard earlier.
Sure.
Right? But to a 16-year-old or whatever I was, you could tell yourself that it was more edgy. And of course, you know, the punk rock and Soundgarden and all that other stuff I was listening to, all quite mainstream friendly, but not the late 90s pop music. And for you, you were not this kind of hard rock.
I
like
just
you
wasn't.
Were defining yourself against this.
But now I define myself as just a fan of music.
It still drives me crazy as I become one of the old people, as I'm slowly marching towards that. If I go on a live video of one of the classic awesome 70s bands or 80s bands, like you go on a video, watch a live of Fleetwood Mac play or somebody, there's going to be, I promise you, someone who's like, oh yeah, back when music was good.
Yeah.
Right? And just shoot me if I ever talk like that.
Okay.
Because, okay, no, you find access to a gun, shoot me. Because the idea that this probably we have to talk about this another time, but like the idea that you turn off your ability to appreciate new things once you reach, I don't know, 20 years old or whatever it is. When in fact, as I've grown older, I am opening up to more value, whether it's music that I used to write off, like obviously 80s pop that I in my heart of hearts truly actually love. But also new music. I mean, we just did an episode on Dua Lipa.
Yeah.
Right? And that song was only, what, 4 years old?
Mm-hmm.
And me as a 16-year-old wouldn't have liked that song because it was sort of disco dance pop.
It was like too poppy for me, and like girls that like Dua Lipa aren't my kind of girls. And like I would put all that stuff
onto
it. And there's
also a version of me at my current age approaching or arriving at middle age that would also be closed-minded to it because it's not the music I listened to when I was 20 years old. And both of those are really sad.
It is sad because you're shortchanging yourself. Like now I'm going to leave here today and now I have 8+ new albums I get to listen to.
But are we still united overall? New metal, not that good though.
I mean, overall, I saw that Woodstock 99 documentary. I don't have a lot of respect for anything that happened there. And it's just like I'm jaded because like I just think of like wallet chains and JNCO jeans and backwards hats and people being dicks. Like when I hear Limp Bizkit. Nevermind the Music is hosted by me, Nicole Vatcher, and Mark Poppany. Mark also produces our podcast. Please be sure to subscribe and leave us a rating and review.
Let us know what you think on social media. We're Never Music Pod on all the major platforms. You can also send us an email at nevermusicpod@gmail.com. Every so often, we'll do a mailbag episode where we'll answer your burning questions.
Thanks for listening.
Warning, the following ZipRecruiter radio spot you are about to hear is going to be filled with F-words.
When you're hiring, we at ZipRecruiter know you can feel frustrated, forlorn even, like your efforts are futile, and you can spend a fortune trying to find fabulous people, only to get flooded with candidates who are just fine. Fortunately, ZipRecruiter figured out how to fix all that. And right now, you can try ZipRecruiter for free at ZipRecruiter.com/zip. With ZipRecruiter, you can forget your frustrations because we find the right people for your roles fast, which is our absolute favorite F word. In fact, 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day.
Fantastic.
So whether you need to hire 4, 40, or 400 people, get ready to meet first-rate talent. Just go to ZipRecruiter.com/zip to try ZipRecruiter for free. Don't forget, that's ZipRecruiter.com/zip. Finally, that's ZipRecruiter.com/zip.